It starts with the part, which parts are cost effective, which parts can you go digital with, and then who are using those parts around the world and what's the business case. And that's what our software does, is answer those questions for people.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP. And with me on the show today, I have my special guest, Espen. Espen, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Tom. Hi, everyone. I'm Espen. I'm the CEO of Vivaldi Group, founder, chief troublemaker. And basically, what we do is we help companies send thousands of parts. So digitizing aftermarket spare parts, putting them in the cloud, and then 3D printing them locally through a collaborative network of local on-demand manufacturing places.
Superb. Superb. So a couple of things before we get into that, Espen, is we should say that you guys are in the SAP IO startup foundry. Do you want to talk about that, first of all, what it is and how you got into it?
Yeah, no, we're super happy to have been accepted. I know that that's something that a lot of companies in our position want to be. And we were lucky enough this year to be part of the New York foundry team. And we're about a month or so into it now. It's a pretty intense program. Very diverse this year, focused on automotive, manufacturing, and a lot of COVID-related issues, of course, in the supply chain this year. So we're part of that batch, and it's been a lot of fun so far. We're meeting a lot of people at SAP, getting a lot of really great introductions, and getting help to navigate what is otherwise quite a large company.
Sure.
With a lot of things going on. So that's been very helpful for us as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because a lot of people don't associate SAP with startups. So what is it that you're getting from the SAP IO Foundry that, you know, you couldn't get otherwise?
Yeah, there's a couple of different things. So, you know, this is a sort of non-equity and non-investment accelerator, which right off the bat, that says a lot about the SAP priorities right there, because there are a lot of companies that kind of, you know, take advantage.
They're not called vulture capitalists for nothing.
Right. Yeah. So that's been very useful. What we get out of it is essentially some real help to understand SAP's business landscape and ecosystem, connect into it in a much more hands-on way than, you know, if we were just to go to the App Store and try to connect in there. And, you know, from Vivaldi's point of view, we're a small 12-person team based out of California and some scattering across the US and the rest of the world. But with such a small team, you know, it's kind of hard to navigate large companies in general. Mm. And particularly when you're trying to figure out your own role in a very large ecosystem, it can be very useful to have some adults in the room to kind of tell us, well, we've done this before and this works. And, you know, here's how we work. And navigating kind of not just the external customer relationships, we've done that in the past by ourselves, but also the internal relationships. How do you create value for SAP? How do you create value for the other partners in the ecosystem, account executives and so on? And honestly, what we didn't expect, which we're getting out of the Foundry program, is just a masterclass in everything from pricing to selling to all of these different aspects, where we get to have, you know, really top people in their field at SAP come in and tell us what they do, which is amazing.
Excellent. Excellent. And okay, what is it that you do? Because you mentioned in the start 3D printing, additive manufacturing. That's a growing space, I have to think. I know, for example, that here in Spain, we have several big Airbus plants, and they do 3D printing of, you know, airplane components. Where do you fit into that ecosystem, 3D printing?
Yeah, I mean, look, 3D printing isn't a new technology. It's been around since the early 80s. And what's happened in the last couple of years is some of the IP expired back in 2012, which started bringing a lot more companies into play.
Okay.
And as a consequence, the prices started going down. And then as a consequence of that, more tooling and more sort of on-demand production systems, material costs and so on has gone down. So steadily since really 2012, we've seen prices go down in the space pretty dramatically. And you know, our role in it is really as a technology partner. We started the company in after having spent almost a decade building desktop 3D printers and stuff as sort of the first wave of this. We started the company in end of 2016, early 2017, really with a question, which was, how is this going to affect supply chain? And, you know, because it's not just 3D printing, it's all production robotics are just getting faster, better, and cheaper all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've spent the last couple of years trying to answer that question. So, you know, we've been scouring, you know, Japanese manufacturing plants. We've crawled through engine rooms on vessels. We've been literally dumpster diving in Norway at construction sites to see what they threw away. Really trying to understand not just, you know, the procurement part, but also what happens to parts afterwards. Because one of the things that we can do with on-demand manufacturing, of course, is do local recycling as well, which is, you know, good for the planet. So we're seeing across the board now, increasingly the cost perspective of parts become such that it's now, you know, it's now feasible to actually print locally and store your parts in the cloud rather than do what's being done at the moment, which is centralized manufacturing, where you have minimum order quantities and the factory in typically China or elsewhere. That's mass manufacturing goods. And then the classic supply chain challenges, how do we get parts around the world? So, you know, we're flipping that on the set and focusing on end usage, printing locally, and that opens up a whole new bunch of opportunities and challenges that I'm sure we'll talk more about.
Sure. Yeah, of course. I guess one concern people might have about 3D printing is, I mean, we've all seen, you know, the images of them 3D printing parts in the International Space Station, and that's phenomenal. Hmm. But, you know, you can't 3D print, you know, an iPhone, for example. And so there are some components that lend themselves to it, others that don't, be it because of complexity or because of the materials used or a mix of both. How does that affect you guys? How do you solve that?
Yes, that's one of the big takeaways we've had from the last couple of years, right? You can't 3D print everything. You can't manufacture everything on demand, nor should you. It's not cost effective, and it's not necessarily good for the environment either. So the way to think about it is there's an increasing number of particularly plastic and metal parts in your spare parts inventory that, you know, for various different reasons, ranging from end of lifetime challenges to distribution challenges to risk challenges around, you know, being vulnerable in your supply chain and so on, that it might be more cost effective to put into the cloud and then print locally. And what Ivaldi does is we'll connect into your procurement data sets and supply chain data, and then using our own machine learning and sort of natural language processing toolkit and big data sets there, we will essentially be able to tell you with a high degree of confidence which parts are good candidates for digital distribution and what the business case is. So we really help you answer two questions. One is what can be printed, and two is what should be printed. And the second question is more important than the first one from a procurement and particularly a cost point of view.
Okay, so you're doing an analysis of what people have or what people purchase and then telling them what they shouldn't.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we kind of flip it around. So we'll give you real-time intelligence on your procurement situation, because it's changing on an ongoing basis. And then you can choose which parts, given our recommendations, you then want to digitize. And depending on the company and the setup, they may choose to take that themselves and go digitize it, or they can work with our team, who are experienced now in a range of industries from automotive to mining to maritime, where we will be able to make sure that parts are, you know, compliant in terms of qualification, quality control, certification, and so on, and then linked into local distribution networks that are capable of producing parts on demand in a cost-effective and quality-controlled manner.
Okay, so that, because that was going to be my next question. How do you know that the 3D printed part, whether it's a spoon or a spanner or whatever it is, how do you know it's as good as the original?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, because, you know, with any new technology, there's a whole bunch of hit and misses. And what we've spent a lot of time actually last 2.5 years on is working with class authorities. And we started off in the maritime and offshore space. So we've been working with some very big companies there to put in guidelines for how to answer that question. How do you know? And the answer is you have to certify the materials, you have to certify the equipment, you have to certify the operator, you have to certify the entire manufacturing tool chain, and have, you know, checks and balances the whole way through. And then when you actually print the part, depending on the level of criticality, you may do additional testing on the part or on you know, dog bones or copies of the part locally in order to verify that it is indeed up to spec and capable of doing what it does. And, but, you know, depending on the business case, that can actually be quite cost effective, because really what it comes down to is, you know, what are the costs of the alternatives? And so for a lot of companies, the alternative right now is having a whole bunch of parts in inventory physically on site. So there's a lot of capital tied up into that. And then once in a while, typically it's what you didn't expect, right? That screws you over. And so once in a while, there's a part that they didn't plan for, maybe because it's not even in the original manual or really listed. And now you need that part in order to keep your equipment up and running. And that downtime can be really, really expensive. So, you know, that's where on-demand manufacturing can really kick into gear and help you, provided you've done some certification work in advance, so you're ready to do that type of category. But if you have done that work, then, you know, you can really change uptime or you know, unscheduled maintenance time from, you know, typically several days if you're having to fly in the part, or at least 24 hours to just a couple of hours or even minutes, depending on the size of the part.
Yeah, that was another thing I was going to ask is, I guess it depends on the printer and it depends on the part. I was going to say, how long does it take to print a 3D part? But that's, I guess that's like, how long is a piece of string, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, unfortunately, we're not kind of quite there where it's the Star Trek replicator just yet. And I think a lot of people back in 2015 thought it would be and then got disappointed when it wasn't. But you know, it's a tool. And like any tool, it takes anything from minutes to hours to even days if you're printing something really large. But what really matters is what's the alternative, right? So if you're competing with FedEx and looking at getting a part from, say, Rotterdam to Singapore, and you're air freighting it. We did the math on this for a part we had to send. So, you know, if you're air freighting it, you're still looking at 2 to 3 days because you have to get it to the airport and the plane has to take off and you have to get it through customs and so on. And it'll cost you easily, you know, $100-$130 to just get it through the system, USD. But if you send it digitally, well, you know, in this case, the part took, I think, something like 9 hours. And it cost us a fraction of that. You know, there's no transportation cost. You're just paying for the part up front. And importantly, we saved about 90% plus on the emissions because you're not spending any CO2 other than server time transporting the part.
Sure.
And it really is. It is quite significant in terms of what you're doing. I think for this particular part, it was something like 7 kilos of CO2 by air freight versus 20 grams of CO2 digitally, right?
Wow.
So what's the future of logistics? Well, if you can hit the price points, I think sending thousands of parts, which is kind of what we do, is the future.
Okay. And that's a good point, hitting price points, because are there any particular parts that lend themselves specifically to this kind of distribution as opposed to others which specifically don't?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So parts with complex internal geometries or complex geometries in general are typically easier to manufacture using 3D printing. There's also, you know, parts that you can combine. And so partly because of complexities, again, in traditional manufacturing, you may have a component or a pump or something that consists of 21, 23 different pieces. Mm-hmm. But then with 3D printing, you can actually combine quite a few of them. So you end up with maybe four or five pieces. And then there's less that can go wrong with the pump as well, which is kind of interesting. So you know, there's all kinds of different things on the new design side that a lot of people are doing. But look, you know, it's not just about 3D printing. It's about milling. It's about injection molding. It's about doing all these things in a local regional capacity. It's never going to fully replace, full assembly plants.
Sure.
You still need that to some extent. But I think the on-demand aspect is going to move up the tool chain very rapidly. And we're already seeing that in factories as well, right? Like they're starting to mass customize more and more. But you still have the challenge then of getting the part from wherever it was made to the end user. And for an increasing number of business cases, it's just cheaper to put in a local production facility, which is great. You know, everyone loves being able to bring manufacturing back locally, regardless of where in the world you are, except for maybe, you know, the big, you know, FedExes and the countries that are doing mass manufacturing today. But I think overall for the world, it's something that we believe will be a good thing. And it totally opens up some new opportunities. If you're an OEM today, pretty much all of your responses and ability to construct your business is tied into your existing supply chain, right?
Sure.
So if a user in the field has a request or a design request, you may have 10,000 parts in your inventory you kind of have to go through from a cost efficiency point of view before you can really update your designs. But with on-demand manufacturing, that's no longer the case, right? And so it's really, if you think about it from kind of a supply chain point of view, if supply chain today is centralized around the fabrication, you know, challenge of getting parts from A to Z, supply chain going digital can be centralized around the user needs. And then why would you replace a broken part with the exact same part anymore? Why wouldn't you upgrade it, evolve it, and actually look at the equipment as much more of an ongoing, evolving piece of machinery that can get, you know, more cost efficient, more environmentally friendly, you know, faster, whatever it is that the end user needs, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, one design fits all, which is the case today.
Sure, sure. You mentioned as well that some of the savings were in that particular example, going from, I think it was London to Singapore, you said, some of the savings were in customs duties. Because obviously that's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, you send a physical item, it has to go through customs. You email the same item, not so much.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one. We've looked at it a little bit. I'm from Norway originally. And actually been talking to some of the delegations visiting us in the Bay Area. They typically come over once in a while to learn about new tech and new developments. And of course, in Norway, you have value-added tax. So if you print things locally in Norway, the value-added tax will actually probably be more of a net positive for Norway in terms of, you know, what Norway exports is primarily, minerals and oil. And stuff that, you know, you're not going to 3D print anytime soon.
Sure.
But then you look at the place like Denmark, which is another country I'm fairly familiar with. And, you know, they today have a lot of, one of the big exports is meat, of course. There are more pigs in Denmark than there are people. And I like to tease my friends with that. But, you know, what it comes down to is if you're able to do local on-demand manufacturing, there's a whole bunch of companies like Memphis Meats and Impossible Foods and so on that are looking at being able to create essentially meat-like products that are increasingly taking over parts of the supply chain. What's interesting here is, well, now, you know, there's a case again for local on-demand manufacturing increasingly. And that may have significant impact on imports and exports in Denmark, say. England's going through a Brexit situation right now, which is, or Britain, I should say, which is, you know, again, causing some pretty big issues on the borders. And so, you know, I think it's one of those issues where we haven't really quite figured out what the complicated consequences of this are going to be. But I think we have an inclination just looking at what's happened in the movie industry and the music industry in terms of them going digital with the challenges before being physical record sales and then the business model just being flipped on its head with the advent of the iPod and Napster and all of these other solutions.
Okay, cool. You mentioned as well if I remember correctly, you mentioned mining, automotive, and marine. Are those the three industries that you have identified as the best candidates, or are they just ones you happen to fall into, or are there other industries that you think are also ideal candidates, or dot, dot, dot?
I mean, there's a bunch. So if you look at 3D printing in particular, which is our sort of where we stem from, typically automotive, aerospace, medical have been kind of the classic spaces, and primarily prototyping. But as costs have gone down, we believe there are a couple of other industries that are, you know, increasingly open up. So we focused in on heavy industry. And really, when you think about it, you know, if you're printing an impeller or pump or engine components, if you can do that for one industry, odds are you can do it for other industries as well. But you have to understand the particulars of that industry in terms of their supply chain regulation and so on. And so we focused in fairly narrowly to begin with. So for us, it's, you know, maritime offshore activities, mining and automotive that we've started out into. And now, and we really only started with maritime, and we've just been sort of pulled into some of these other spaces. Now that we're starting to get the handle on some of those, we're also looking at other energy activities, so gas turbine power plants and so on. But really, it starts with the part. Which parts are cost-effective? Which parts can you go digital with? And then who are using those parts around the world, and what's the business case? And that's what our software does, is answer those questions for people. And you know, there are really three steps to it. So you have to figure out first, what's the business case? What parts in my inventory can be taken digital? Then you have to actually take them digital. So it's not just enough to have a 3D file. You have to have what we call a performance envelope, understanding the sort of boundary requirements of the part. You know, what are the qualifications, the quality control aspects, mechanical, chemical environment the part needs to operate in, what are the equivalent materials you're going to be using, the equipment you're going to be using, all that stuff. And then the final step is actual, you know, implementation of a distributed manufacturing chain. So that's where we come in. We can help you with a tailored solution, either with existing facilities, or if you are out in the middle of nowhere and you need your own, you know, facility in your own warehouse, we can make recommendations and help you set up local on-demand capabilities and operator training and so on at your own site. And that's, you know, once you have that, then you're ready to go.
Nice.
But it takes a little bit to get there. And what's kind of cool is it's happening faster and faster because we're doing it more and more now.
Okay.
And so, you know, this is where it gets interesting, is we're now looking at cases where, you know, you may save multi-million dollars at the single site. And then once you've figured out how to do that, now you can do it for all of your other sites around the world, right? And that's just across a couple of categories of parts. So it's very interesting for us. You know, it's been a sort of slow build up to a point where I think we've kind of figured out now what the supply chain may look like. We're still figuring out a whole bunch of stuff. But at the end of the day, what it comes down to is, can these parts be printed? Can they be certified? Can they be quality controlled? And with all of that, is it cost effective to go digital? And the answer now is yes for a growing number of parts.
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today. Influence the future.
Okay. And where to from here? Because, okay, you've gotten to where you are today, but what's the kind of 5-10 year plan? And where is 3D printing going in the next 5-10 years? Because it's come on leaps and bounds in the last 8 years, we'll say, since 2012.
Yeah, that's a great question. You're full of great questions today, Tom.
Sorry about that.
No, it's good. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, right?
Good.
So at the risk of geeking out, the sort of where next kind of has a couple of different levels. But just to begin with the broad strokes, right? So today, here in the US at least, if I want to order something for my fridge or for my home, I can just go online, I can place an order and it'll be there the next day at the latest, a lot of the time, you know, particularly here in the Bay Area, it's just super fast. So, you know, if I'm in heavy industry today, I can't do that. You're typically looking at 4 to 6 week lead times for anything you order.
Wow.
And it's quite a slow process. They may have the part locally. It depends on where you are in the world. But it's not unusual to hear 4 to 6 week lead times quoted across heavy industry. And so there's just a disconnect between what people are experiencing on the consumer side and what people are experiencing in heavy industry. So that needs to change.
Mm.
And then the other thing I think is, if you think about it from a supply chain point of view, going on-demand mass customization, it has some challenges, and we can dig into how to certify parts and connect in a whole bunch of different parts that are evolving. We have toolkits for that. We've thought a lot about how to do that. But really, once you're able to do that and you can optimize for the end user case, environmentally, in terms of safety, in terms of efficiency on site, things change very rapidly. I've spent so much time in the field the last couple of years just talking to engineers, you know, chief engineers, mechanics, people doing replacement services. And they're all frustrated to some extent by, you know, slow supply chains or an inability to get things exactly the way they want. And they're not even used to, like, they're not even used to really talking to the OEM and having a relationship in terms of evolving the design. You know, today, if you're doing that in heavy industry, that's kind of unusual. You're part of some in a program. That's my daughter in the background.
Sorry about that. Okay, we're all working from home. It's fine.
The joys of having a 3-year-old.
That's fine. I've lived through that period as well. I've two boys who are now 14 and 17. So that brings a whole other range of problems. So
But you know, I've actually got to say, working from home with my daughter has been one of the best things this year. It's just absolutely amazing to be able to have a digital workforce like this. And you know, actually bringing it back to what we're doing, right? Going digital is happening in all aspects of life right now. And it can be a really, really positive thing, but it has to be managed, right? And I think one of our concerns is a lot of people, particularly in the heavy industry, looked at 3D printing back in 2014, 2015, and they went like, well, it's too expensive or it doesn't hit our quality. And so they sort of discarded it. And, you know, it's come a long way since then, and it's still moving very rapidly.
Sure.
And what it comes down to for us, you know, if you look forward 5 or 10 years, production robotics is just going to get faster, better, cheaper. And so it's really only a matter of the business case as to when you go digital with your inventory. It's going to be pretty much, you know, a no-brainer for new parts, I think, to have it digital. You may still choose to do on-demand at your, you know, centralized production facility for some parts. But then increasingly also as tooling gets cheaper, you're going to want to move it further afield and into kind of the localized space. And it just gives you a lot more flexibility. It gives you a lot more power in terms of speed. And the environmental impact is also very, very positive.
Cool. You mentioned sustainability and environmental impact a number of times. You referred to the reduction in CO2 of shipping that part versus printing that part. Obviously, sustainability is something that you think a lot about. Mm. But can you talk to some of the sustainability advantages of 3D printing parts? I mean, they might be obvious to you and I, but maybe not to some of the people who are listening.
Yeah, right. So there's a couple of different things about it. So one is, if you think about it purely from a transportation point of view, if you're printing parts locally, particularly using recycled materials, which is increasingly feasible, you're able to, take away a whole bunch of transportation cost and also a lot of transportation emissions. So sure. That's one of the major savings. And the second one is, which is something I'm quite excited about, is the ability of on-demand tools, again, not just 3D printing, it's like hybrid CNC milling and so on. But you can go and you can take an old part and you can maybe, you know, cut out the part that's broken and then just print directly on the part to fix it, so refurbishment cases. Or you can, melt down the parts and then have 3D printed molds locally that you use for casting, for instance. And so depending on the materials and depending on the part, there's actually a whole bunch of things you can do that bring that part more cost effectively locally, and therefore save a lot of transportation emissions. I mean, we're talking various estimates are out there, but you know, something like 7% of global emissions could easily be cut out by going digital on this sort of space. So it's quite significant on a part by part basis as well. Being able to evolve the part rather than scrap it, I think that's a really, really interesting case. Because if you look at, particularly in maritime and heavy industries, equipment lasts for 15, 20, 30 years, you know, easily.
Sure.
Average lifetime of a vessel is 24 years right now. So, you know, you can imagine, one, by the end of its lifetime, the OEMs may not even be around anymore. or if they are, they certainly don't want to be replaced, you know, putting out those same parts. And so if you give both the OEMs and the end users the ability to evolve their equipment and, you know, do retrofits, do things that you can't do today in a cost-effective manner, we're looking at the much more rapidly and more sustainable sort of movement towards lower energy, lower emission output, and higher efficiencies.
All right. The 3D printed component could be better than the original. That's something that a lot of people, you know, don't necessarily grok up front. And I love the idea of using recycled materials to 3D print, because I can't remember who said it, but I remember a quote from somebody saying that it's only waste if you waste it. And of course, right there. That's it. We are well over the 20 minutes at this point, Espen. So thank you for that. Is there anything that I've not asked you that you think I should have, or any points we've not touched on that you think, you know, people should be aware of?
No, I mean, I think the only thing that's worth mentioning is just the impact on people that this can have as well. So, you know, if you go local manufacturing, it opens up a whole new opportunity in terms of local entrepreneurship, getting connected into a global distributed manufacturing tool chain that otherwise isn't really available today. And for big companies in small communities, you know, one of the big things for them is maintaining good local relationships. And one of the ways to do that is to create avenues of opportunities for the, you know, for the people who are local. So this is a really great way of doing it. And I think one of the things that keeps me the most hopeful about this is actually in many ways, it could be a grassroots resurgence of innovation as well. Not just for the parts that you're, you know, printing for that particular mining site or vessel or whatever. But once you have the tools in the local community, now you can print a whole bunch of other stuff as well, ranging from, you know, fixing plumbing issues or, you know, pumps for wells or whatever it is that you're doing. And that's super exciting as well.
Lovely, lovely, fantastic. Yeah. Espen, that's brilliant, brilliant. If people want to know more about yourself or about Ivaldi or about any of the things we've been chatting about today, where would you have me send them?
The easiest is to go to ivaldi.io, ivaldi.io, which is our website. Or if they want to talk to me or someone else, they can just email our digital assistant, Sam, S-A-M, at ivaldi.io.
Nice. Lovely. Yep. Lovely. Brilliant. Espen, that's been great. Thanks a million for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much, Tom. Really appreciate your time and effort, and look forward to hearing it.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.